And DAB Digital Radio now, the daily service is led by John Forrest. This is Radio 4 FM. In 15 minutes, we'll hear about the campaign to recognise the women labourers who helped build London's Waterloo Bridge. That's on Woman's Hour with Jane Garvey, after the news at 10. First, we'll open our new Book of the Week. Mary Portas reads her account of growing up in a bustling Irish family. Shop Girl takes us back to Watford in 1967.
The smells of petrol, tea and leather fill Dad's work van as I sit beside him watching concrete streets give way to leafy greenness. Be a good girl, and I might take you to Mr. Tights if we're not too late back. Sweets dance before my eyes. Rhubarb and custards, humbugs and pear drops, flying saucers, coconut snow and milk bottles. The shelves in Mr. Tights' shop are lined with jars that make my heart race. My father is a tea salesman. He drives around Hertfordshire delivering Brook Bond to shopkeepers, and sometimes I tag along. Oh, surely you'll be wanting to order a bit more than that, Dad says to men in aprons and women in brightly coloured nylon coats, standing behind counters topped with shiny glass. There's a cold snap coming. People will be needing more coppers this week, won't they? Peals of laughter greet my dad's patter. And invariably it works. He's so good at selling tea that he's had his picture taken for the front of the Brook Bond staff magazine. Sammy's Flair, said the headline. And my mother roared with laughter when she saw it. Look at you, Sam Newton, she exclaimed. Ha, you'll be selling ice to the Eskimos next. As he talks to the shopkeepers, I gaze at the shelves full of neat repetition and colour. Bright yellow labels on Chappie dog food and tomato red on Heinz soups. The green, yellow, white and red Kellogg's cornflake packets standing next to the little baker men, etched black against the crisp white of Home Pride flour bags. I like the smells too. The sharp tang of cheese, warm aroma of just baked bread and snap of fresh newspaper ink. These shops are places where the bell always pings as you open the door. The air hits you warm as you walk inside, and a smile greets you. Most of all, they are places where people chat and collect news, exchange gossip and advice, meet, greet and love, or sometimes hate their neighbours. Even as a six-year-old, I know there is a world enclosed in the four tiny letters of the word shop. I was always a little afraid of my father. At 6'2", he seemed like a giant, but it was more than his height that made him such a commanding man to be around. He would muck in with all of us and sing along to the big band and crooner records that he and Mum continually played. But Dad's job was to provide, and all of us knew there was a line that couldn't be crossed because his temper was finite. Our home is a semi at the end of a row of terraced houses on Windsor Road in North Watford. Upstairs, there are three bedrooms, Mum and Dad's, one shared by my three brothers, and a box room that's mine and my sister Tish's. The only source of heating in the house is the electric fire downstairs, and on cold winter nights, we stand in front of it for as long as possible before racing upstairs and diving between frozen sheets. Tish was once so reluctant to leave the fire that her Littlewood's nightie melted. My mother stands in front of the hallway mirror as my brothers and sister run around her, scrambling to get on their coats. Patch is barking, my brother Joe is looking for a lost shoe, and the baby has started to wail. Mum stops for a few seconds. Unscrewing her lipstick, she slicks it on with the few practice strokes of a woman used to never having enough time to spend too much on herself. Mum always wears lipstick, but each Sunday she dabs on a couple of delicate strokes of perfume for good measure. Not a lot, though. She wouldn't want Father Bussy to think that she spends too much time dolling herself up. And Father Bussy's opinion mattered. Religion was so ingrained in my mother that she once went to the cinema and absent-mindedly genuflected as she walked down the aisle to her seat.
"Let's go,"
Dad shouts as he opens the front door.
"Don't forget to look at your egg face in the chalice at communion,"
Joe whispers as he walks beside me.
"Shut up,"
I wail back at him, trying to push the image from my mind, knowing I never will. Now I'll spend most of Mass trying not to laugh. I envy my brothers, who are all altar boys, taking part in the drama of Mass, while I can only watch it. The rustle of starched white surplices with frills around the collar. The smell of the incense as Father Bussy intones the prayers. The feel of velvet carpet underneath their feet at the altar instead of stone. Meanwhile, I am left to sit on a hard pew every week, knowing that for me and all the other children here, Sunday Mass will be one long battle against laughing and getting a clip round the ear. The day that Mr. O'Riordan put a pound on the collection plate and took back change has never been forgotten. Or the sight of Mr. O'Sullivan clenching and unclenching his buttocks for an hour each week as he concentrates on praying harder. Try as I might, Joe's words ring in my ears, and I wait for the moment when I go up to the altar to be blessed while Mum and Dad take communion. Laughter and fear twist inside my stomach as I kneel beside them and try to concentrate on my prayer. But the moment Father Bussy reaches my parents with the altar boys following him, I look up to see Joe staring at me. A tuft of curls on his head and a wicked gleam in his eyes. Then my gaze is inexorably drawn towards the chalice where I see my egg face staring back at me from the rounded side of the silver cup that holds the blood of Christ. As my brother cautions his laughter to save for later, I start to giggle. It's the annual church youth club competition tomorrow, and it's always a big event in our house. All of us dress up each year, and I love it. Thinking up ideas, laughing some off and bringing others to life, we have all inherited Dad's love of painting and drawing. Give us cereal packets and we'll glue them together to make the Leaning Tower of Pizza. A cardboard vegetable box will be recycled into face masks, or the inside of loo rolls stuck together to make musical instruments. My childhood is an endless battle to avoid getting lightheaded from too many glue fumes.
"Ah, would you look at her? Doesn't she look grand?"
I bask in approval as my parents' faces crinkle with smiles and Mum leans down to shower me with kisses. Last year, I was dressed in a gold jumper and matching tights, with my face also painted gold, and 2 pounds of fresh carrots strung together to make a garland that balanced precariously on the top of my head. I was 24 carat gold and romped home with first prize. But I think that this year's fancy dress costume might be the best. I'm wearing a bottle green jumper and woolly tights, and my arms and legs are sticking through holes that have been cut in a huge cardboard box. Half of it's painted the same bottle green as my clothes, and the other half is turquoise. On the front is a black and gold emblem that Dad has carefully painted. Around my head is another crown, but this year it's not made of carrots. Instead, Mum has sewn together about 30 of Dad's fag boxes to create my crown in glory. I'm dressed as a packet of cigarettes, a packet of Players number 6, to be precise. Needless to say, I win first prize again. It's so cold when I walk downstairs that I can hardly feel my fingers. Radio 4 is on in the kitchen. Gobbling my toast, I walk over to the radio and switch it to my favourite station. Tony Blackburn is chatting away and my heart skips a beat as Get It On starts playing. T Tish gets up from the table and slips her satchel over her shoulder. I stare at my immaculate big sister. White shirt pristine, maroon striped tie straight as a die, and black Clark shoes shined. My new school uniform is a constant challenge for me. There are indoor shoes and outdoor shoes, a tie, blazer and boater, PE kit and hockey stick. 6 months after starting at St Joan of Arc's Grammar School, my socks continually slip down my skinny legs and my shirt mysteriously untucks itself. Stains cling to my blazer and my boater is permanently halfway down my forehead. That hat has suddenly made me and a handful of my friends different. We all passed the exam for St Joan's and we've crossed a gulf from the Watford comp kids now that we get on the bus to a grammar school in Rickmansworth. Poshos, they say as we walk past. Snobs. But it's not them that we're different from. It's many of the girls we go to school with now. Girls with clipped vowels and English parents. Girls who are not Catholic and live in places like Great Missenden and Chorley Wood. Girls with mothers who pick them up in Volvos or Rovers at the end of the day and fathers who work in advertising or company boardrooms. Girls with names like Mandy, Debbie, Linda and Carrie. Ever since starting at St Joan's, I've longed to change my name to Cindy. I don't yet really understand what all of this means. All I know is that I feel different from other kids for the first time in my life, and I've started bending the truth to cover it up. I talk about my bedroom, not the box room I share with Tish. I mention my wardrobe, not the curtain covering the space next to the chimney breast. I say I shop in Miss Selfridge, not Watford Market or second-hand shops. And apparently, my father now drives a Jaguar. It did cross my mind when I started St. Joan's that maybe I should finally grow up a bit and stop getting into trouble. But the urge to play jokes and be the centre of attention was too much. Sister Angela was our timid but slightly eccentric Irish deputy head teacher. She taught us environmental studies in a glass building that had been built as an extension to the red brick school. When it heated up like a furnace in the summer, our lessons were constantly disrupted by her hot flushes. She was particularly fond of the ducks that lived on the school stream, and one day I decided that they should see a bit more of life. Lifting them up, I carried them to the tennis courts and let them loose. Soon a duck hunt was underway as Sister Angela had another hot flush at the thought that her ducks had been kidnapped. As usual, someone spotted me and I was hauled up in front of the head. I felt shame wash over me as she told me that my joke had been unkind. The ducks reminded Sister Angela of her home on a farm in Ireland, miles away, and she was devastated when they went missing. I wasn't rude. I didn't steal. I didn't bully. I respected most of the rules because I liked the structure of school. But when the chance came to make myself and other people laugh, I always took it. Take me. It was how I found my place and made friends in a world that seemed so different from the one I knew.
Mary Portas, and how dare she tune the radio away from us. She's reading from her autobiography, Shop Girl. It's abridged by Joe Coombs, produced by Hannah Marshall, and it's a Loftus production for BBC Radio 4. Tomorrow, Mary's family life is shattered by an unexpected tragedy. Every Sunday morning at 5 to 8 here on Radio 4, a charity gets the chance to ask listeners for support. And listeners have been responding generously for over 90 years. You've bought wheelchairs in Malawi, funded all kinds of medical research, supported education in prisons and sent books all over the world. If you know of a charity or if you're connected to one that you think might benefit from a BBC broadcast appeal, you can find out more on the Radio 4 website. The next application round closes on the 30th of March. Search online for BBC Radio 4 Appeal. After the news, how does a relationship survive a life-changing disability or illness? Woman's Hour hears about the experiences of two couples, and also this morning we'll meet two of the female candidates standing for UKIP on the 7th of May. Woman's Hour in a couple of minutes.